Every morning, we practice loving kindness meditation. And when we practice loving kindness meditation, we practice it as a mind work. Loving kindness meditation is one of the subjects of samatha meditation, and so all practice of meditation falls under the head manokama, that is mind work, so action done in mind. And there are two other kamas or two other works, say body work and mouth work. Say action done by body and action done by speech. So we are so used to thinking loving kindness as mind work, manokama, that we are hardly aware that it can be expressed in deed and in word also. Buddha once taught to the monks these three kinds of works, the bodily work, speech work, and mind work accompanied by loving kindness or metta. Or in other words, Buddha taught three kinds of loving kindness or three kinds of metta. Metta expressed in deed, metta expressed in word, and metta in mind. And Buddha added three more practices, and he calls these six qualities or three these six practices saraniya. Saraniya means that which makes people remember. So these six qualities taught in this discourse are those that make the practitioners remembered by the other members of the society. And Buddha also said these qualities are conducive to unity in the community. And on one occasion, Buddha taught these qualities to monks who had been divided following a dispute on a very minor rule of conduct. First, two monks quarreled or had a dispute regarding a minor rule. And they quarreled and they lost metta for each other. And then their pupils would come to be divided. And then their devotees, the lady, will also come to be divided. And it is said that even the celestial beings or gods come to be divided. And at first Buddha was unable to reconcile them. They would not listen to the Buddha. So later, Buddha talked to them, among other things, these six qualities, six kinds of practices. And especially metta expressed in deed, in word, are qualities that should be developed any time. And I think it's more more needed these times when there are so much disharmony, so much hatred, so much violence in the world. So Buddha said, monks, there are six ways of being considerate. It's not quite the right translation. So there are six kinds of qualities that make their practitioners remembered by the members of society. What six? Here in monks, a monk has metta indeed established towards his companions in holy life, openly and in private. And this is the first quality. So the first quality is actually to practice metta indeed, or to practice metta by bodily actions, to express metta by bodily actions. And the second is to express metta in speech, in word, by way of speech. And the third is to practice metta in thought. And Buddha always said, openly and in private. That means in the presence of, say, another person, as well as in the absence of that person. So the first is metta in deed, metta in bodily actions. So how do we express metta in bodily actions? Now when you see how do we express metta in bodily actions? When you see someone carrying a big load, you go and help him to carry that load. That is metta in deed. Somebody is trying to cross the street, and then you go and help that person to cross the street. That is also metta expressed in deed. Now, among monks, metta in deed means doing one's duties to one's own teachers, or being a companion in dyeing the robes or washing the robes with younger monks. That is also metta expressed in deed. And also, they may have something to do, and you help them finish their work. That is also metta expressed in deed. Sometimes they may put something in the wrong place, and you keep them in their own place, and that is also metta expressed in deed. So there are many ways of expressing metta by bodily actions. So all these actions are done with metta, and so they are called metta bodily actions. And as lay people, you can practice metta indeed in many ways. That is, in their presence. Now, in their absence, that means on their back, how do you practice metta indeed? Sometimes somebody may leave a work undone, and he is not there, and if you can do that work, you do the work to finish it, and that is one way of expressing metta indeed. Sometimes you just keep their things in order in their respective places, and that is also metta indeed. Now, the Venerable Sariputta is said to had to express metta in this way very quite often, or maybe we can say always. Now, Venerable Sariputta did not go out for alms with other monks. So he always kept behind. So after all the monks have left, he would go around the monastery and look at things, and when some things are misplaced or some things are not in a neat order, then he would put them right, and only after that he would go out for alms. And that was showing metta indeed. And giving something, someone something to eat, and that also showing metta indeed. So there are many ways we can express metta by bodily actions. And when lay people say greet monks or offer food to monks, and they say goodbye to monks and go a little way with the monks when they return, so all these gestures of politeness or love are actually metta expressed through actions of the body. Now Buddha said these qualities will make people remember you. Now if you do something good to somebody and you do with a genuine metta consciousness, then you will be remembered with love by these people. And when there is love, when you do something good to them and they love you, there will be unity between you and that person. And so it is conducive to unity in the community if all the members of the community practice metta in this way. So metta expressed through bodily actions is a unifying factor in the life of a community. And we should promote the practice of metta in this way in our communities. And the second is metta through words. So saying, when you talk to people, say you use gentle and kind words. And calling them, say, by good names, like Mr. So-and-so or the Venerable So-and-so and something like that. So, and talking to them gently, even when there is an occasion, say, to censure or to criticize, say, you can use gentle words so as to convince them of their mistakes or whatever. And all these are acts of metta through the action of speech, or through metta through words. And that is in their presence. And in their absence also you can practice metta, see, telling good things about them, referring to them as Mr. So-and-so or Venerable So-and-so. So by word of mouth, we can practice metta as well as we can practice in our minds. So metta should be practiced in front of them as well as on their back, or in their presence as well as in their absence. Now, metta through word, through deed, and metta through word cannot be done without the metta in mind. Because if we do not have metta mind or metta consciousness, we cannot express it in deed or in words. So the third practice is metta in mind. And this is practiced as a meditation as we do every day here, wishing happiness and peacefulness for all beings. Now, how do you practice metta in mind to a person in his presence? So, looking at that person, you may say, may he be well, happy and peaceful. Or you can just look at him with metta, eyes, expressing metta. And so you don't say anything by word of mouth, but you wish well, and you look at him with eyes, pleasing to him. And so that is the kind of the practice of metta in mind to a person in front of him when he is present, and sending thoughts to him when he is away is practicing metta in mind in his absence. So we can express metta both in bodily actions, in our speech, and in our minds. It is a sad fact that these qualities are vanishing from the society, from the modern society. And people seem to forget about these qualities. And I think that is why there is so much disharmony and violence in the world today. I think sometimes the whole system is at fault. Now, if some children come to your house, you are afraid to give them food, because if something goes wrong with the food, you will be sued. Now, this system makes people, what do you call that, apathetic? Something like that, to each other. So you want to be friendly, but you cannot be friendly because you are afraid that you might be sued if something goes wrong. And if someone falls down on the sidewalk, you will hesitate before you pick him up or you help him, because you may be wrongly accused and then taken to court. So this system makes people not have metta to each other. You are afraid to have metta to other people, because you may be sued or taken to court, or you may get into trouble. So this is one thing that should be, that something should be done about that. Now, laws are made to protect good people, but sometimes they are misused or abused. And so these laws for suing people are maybe made for the protection of good people, but people take advantage of these laws, and then they just sue at a very slight provocation. So these laws have made people not express metta towards each other. And also, children are taught not to tolerate, to fight back, or to strike back, to be aggressive. So when they are taught this way, how can they practice metta, and how can the community be a peaceful one if the members of the communities do not practice metta in their deeds and in their words? So now the city of Oakland has trouble. They have a lot of violence. And now the people of the city have assembled, and then they are finding out ways to correct this situation. But I think unless they go to the root of the problem, it will be very difficult to solve this. And the root is to go to homes and schools. So these qualities, these practices should be taught by parents to their children and by teachers to their pupils. And only when these children are taught or imbued with these good qualities, understanding of these good qualities, will they act in an acceptable manner, and so the community will live in peace. So it is very important that these practices begin at home and at school when people are still young and impressionable. And there is a lot of violence in the media, and this is also one factor that makes people do not have metta towards each other. So these practices are actually not difficult to put into practice, and they are not expensive. You can practice metta without expense of anything at all. And it can bring very, very good and very desirable results, and it can change the conditions in the community or in the city, in the country, in the world, and so change the lives of people and make people enjoy their life more, make people live their lives in more safety and in more comfort and more peacefulness. So what the Buddha taught 2,500 years ago with regard to this metta can still be implemented into the society in these modern days, and we will get good results from the practice of these qualities. So these are the three qualities, I mean three practices. Metta expressed through body, through speech, and through mind. So when you are walking, you can show metta to other people by just stepping aside and letting him go the way. Or sometimes you can show metta by showing a little respect to that person if that person is older than you are. So there are a lot of ways to show respect, to show metta, to express metta to other people. And when one has metta to the other people, then the other people has metta to that person too, because metta is like a vibration, and so it goes back and forth both ways. If you have love for someone, then that person will also have love for you. And when we express metta with words, we use the gentle and kind words, and this is very good in this country to say have a nice day, or have a good trip, or good morning. And these may be considered trivial, but actually these also help smooth the communication or contact between people. Now metta. No, I left the book. Now, the word metta is defined as that which is sticky, which is glutinous. So when there is metta, you keep together two things. So when there is no metta, there is no how to go coming together. So I always compare it to oil you put in the engine. So you will not drive a car if there is no oil in the car, right? Because you know that engine will be damaged. But most of the times we forgot to put some oil or some grease in our communication with other people. And that is why there are so much conflict. What about that? Conflict. Yeah. So, it is good, say, to put some oil of metta day, or keep, take care or something like that. Because people are so used to saying these sentences that they just come them. Especially those whose job is, say, to say these things. You know, in Japan, and there are department stores, and at the foot of every escalator there is a girl, and her duty is just to say, "Watch your step, watch your step." Only that. That is her duty when people use the escalator. So she may be saying, "Watch your step," thousands of times a day, and so sometimes she may not mean it, although she is saying that. So when we say such things that have a nice day or whatever, they should come from our heart and not from our things with other people. I think the machinery of the communication would be very smooth, and so we will live in harmony and in peace wherever we are. So these are the three qualities, or three kinds of ways of expressing metta. Now the other three, the first of the other three is sharing. You know, the discourses are taught to monks, and so most of them have to do with monks' lives, but you can adapt it to lives of lay people too. So the fourth of the six qualities mentioned in this sutta is those proper gains gotten according to rule, be they but bowl scrapes, he loves to share them indiscriminately, to have them in common with his virtuous fellows in the holy life. So this is for a monk. Whatever a monk gets must be according to Vinaya. That means he must not get things by improper means. Now, proper means for a monk is to go out for alms and get things and get food and others, and obtained by proper means. But if a monk treats a person, give a medicine, or tell fortune, and then he gets something in return, then that is said to be obtained through improper means. So here, gotten according to rule means gotten according to the rules of Vinaya. Be they bowl scrapes, just something he got in a bowl. He loves to share them indiscriminately, to have them in common with his virtuous fellows in the holy life. So a monk is encouraged, say, to share whatever he gets with his members of his community. And there is a practice called Saraniya, which is very, very difficult. And perhaps nobody nowadays practices this. And that is, see, a monk practicing this kind of vow, or whatever we may call it, must go to go for alms, and when he comes back, he must give whatever he has got to, say, sick monks, or to those who are visiting, and to those young monks who are not well acquainted with the ways of life of a monk. And when there is still left over, then he share it with other monks. And only after other monks have eaten and those who are visiting, and to those young monks who are not well acquainted with the ways of life of a monk. And when there is still left over, then he share it with other monks. And only after other monks have eaten and still there is remainder, he will eat it. If there is no remainder, he may go back to the village again and go for a second round and bring back food and so on. So the principle is, whatever he gets, he first offer it to other monks. And he must be delighted when other monks take the food from his bowl. He must not get disappointed at any moment at all. So it's very difficult. And when he share, he must share indiscriminately. So that means he must not say, this kind of food I will share and the other kind of food I will not. Or say, I will share with this kind of persons and not with other kinds of persons. He must not have these discriminations. He must share with virtuous or who are fulfilling the purity of moral conduct through keeping the precepts properly. So he must act in this way for 12 years, it is said. And if at the end of the 12 years, on the last day of the 12 years, he brought some food, and then then other monks took his food, and if he get disappointed on that last day, then his vow is broken. So, follow that vow. So if a person is successful in his practice, that practice, then he will never be without food or without anything at all. Even when during the time of famine or during the, if he goes into the forest where no human beings live, he will get plenty to eat and to wear, because God will take care of him. So here the spirit is the sharing whatever you get with other members of the community. And this is also a very good plan. You let other people use first, and then later on you use it yourself. So this sharing of what one gets is also pleasing to other people. And so if you share with other people, then other people will always remember you in their fond memories. And also this the quality of sharing is a unifying factor in the community life. Now again, these days, people don't want to share. See, I worked for this. So when I get it, I will enjoy it myself. Why should I share this with other people? I have suffered a lot to get this amount. And so I will enjoy it myself. I will not share it with any other people. Many people have such attitude. And so this also we have to teach younger people, teach kids. So when they are young, and so that they have this habit of sharing what they have with other people. So sharing something with other people make other people's mind soft, and so they like you, and so there is a harmonizing quality in this practice of sharing. So this is the fourth factor in the life. The fourth quality of a monk who wants to live being loved by others, and who want to live in unity in a given community. The fifth one is the practice of sila, strictly keeping the moral precepts. those virtues that are unbroken, without flaw, spotless, without blemish, bringing freedom, praised by wise men, incorruptible, leading to concentration. He dwells one in virtue with them among his fellows in the holy life, openly and in private. Now this is also one quality to be remembered. So this is keeping the precepts, or keeping the purity of moral conduct. And the moral conduct you keep must be like those that are kept by the noble ones. Now the noble ones, or those who have attained any stage of enlightenment, keep the moral precepts unbroken. If he's a lay person, for example, a person who has reached the first stage of enlightenment or Sotapanna, if he's a lay person, he will not break any of the five moral precepts. Even at the risk of his life, he will never break these rules. And if he's a monk, he will not break any of the 227 rules. And here it is said that they must be unbroken, and then what? Unbroken, without flaw, spotless, without blemish. That means, in brief, that means they must not be broken anywhere, in the beginning, or in the end, or in the middle, or two precepts consecutively, or one here, or one there. So they must not be broken in any way at all. So all moral precepts must be kept unbroken. Only when the precepts are kept unbroken will these keep these moral precepts unbroken, as pure as possible, to resemble those of the noble persons or who have reached enlightenment. And these precepts, or the keeping of this precept, must are praised by wise men. So good people praise those who keep precepts. So keeping precepts means keeping one's moral conduct pure, not doing anything morally wrong, and so he is pleasing to other people. Other people love him, and other people will remember him, and so it has a harmonizing effect. And then the precept must be incorruptible and leading to concentration. Now that is very important, leading to concentration. In the teachings of the Buddha, we go step by step. Say the spiritual path, we go step by step. So the first step is actually moral conduct or sila. See, our sila must be pure. If our sila is not pure, then we cannot hope to get concentration. Because if our moral conduct is not pure, we have a feeling of guilt. And this feeling of guilt can interfere with our meditation. Because when we practice meditation, we want to be very pure. We want to keep our minds very pure. And it is a time when these thoughts of guilt, these thoughts, that we cannot get concentration. And if we can ultimately reaching the state of enlightenment. So, keeping moral conduct pure, or keeping sila pure, is the very beginning of one spiritual path. And when sila is kept pure, it leads to concentration. That means, when we practice meditation, we get concentration easily when our moral conduct is pure. So, a monk is encouraged or enjoined to keep his precepts unbroken. And here also, even in secret, even in private, say we are not to break rules. Sometimes we may be tempted to break a rule when nobody is seeing us, or nobody sees me and I'll break this rule, it's okay. Something like that. But whether it is in front of other people or in secret, we are not to break any of these rules, but keep them unbroken, keep them intact. In the Jataka there is a story of Bodhisattva who refused to steal jewelry because he knew that even though nobody knows, he himself know that, and so it is not right. So there is a great teacher in a certain place, and he had say about 500 students, and he had a beautiful daughter, say intelligent, beautiful, and so he wanted to give his daughter to one of his pupils, who was deserving. So one day he called all his pupils and told them, I have this daughter, beautiful and intelligent, and I want to give her away in marriage to one of you who is deserving. Now, I want her to wear jewelry on her wedding. So, bring some jewelry and take them from people when they do not know. That means steal them. And so, he sent out his pupils. And many pupils came back with, say, many pieces of jewelry. In fact, 499 people came back with jewelry. But one came back empty-handed. So the teacher asked him, why didn't you bring jewelry as I have told you? And he said, teacher, you said that take jewelry when the owners are not looking, or when owners do not know. Not owners. Take jewelry and let nobody know. So he said, even though nobody knows, I myself know, because I see I'm stealing. And so there is not a single secret place in the world where I can do something morally wrong without the knowledge of others, because I am the other and I know. So I did not bring anything. So the teacher was pleased with him, and so he gave his daughter to that pupil. So when we keep precepts, so we must keep, whether other people are looking or not, whether it is in front of them or in private or in secret. So everywhere we should keep the moral precepts. And this keeping of moral precepts will make us dear to our fellow companions in the holy life or wherever you live. And so it is conducive to harmony among the members of the community. And so it is also one of the qualities that people should have if they want to have a peaceful and united community. Now, the last one is panya. The last one is try to get wisdom or understanding like those who have reached enlightenment. So in order to get panya like those who have reached enlightenment, you need to get enlightenment. So panya at the moment of enlightenment is the best one. And in order to get that panya, you have to practice vipassana meditation. So the sixth one, to get panya means actually to practice meditation. So the Aryan view or understanding leading him who acts accordingly to the utter destruction of suffering. He dwells one in view with that among his fellows in the holy life, openly and in private. That means that he must practice meditation. And one thing noteworthy is leading him who acts accordingly to the utter destruction of suffering. So the practice will lead him to utter destruction of suffering. Lead him in him who acts, who practices. So the practice will take us to the destruction of suffering if only if we practice it. If we do not practice it, it will not take us to destruction of suffering. So it is important that first we understand that this is the way which leads to the destruction of suffering, and then we must practice it. If we do not practice it, we cannot expect anything from this from this path or from this way. So the Aryan view or the noble wisdom, noble understanding that leads to the destruction of suffering is to be practiced, not just to be understood, not just to be read, not just to be heard. And in order to reach that wisdom, the wisdom of enlightenment, we need to practice vipassana meditation. And when people practice meditation, there will be no conflict between among them. And so people who practice meditation, even if they don't practice themselves, they will like other people who practice meditation. There are many people who themselves cannot practice meditation, but who are willing to help other people practice meditation, offering food to them or offering opportunities to them and so on. So those who practice meditation are dear to many people, and when people practice meditation, there will be no conflict among them, and so there is unity, there is peace, there is harmony in the community they live in. And so this is also one of the practices or one of the factors that make the community peaceful. So altogether, there are six qualities we have to develop in order to create a peaceful society, a peaceful community. And these are metta in three ways, and then sharing or generosity, and then good conduct, and good wisdom or practice of vipassana meditation. So if we can practice all six of them, it is the best. Even if people cannot practice the vipassana meditation, at least they can practice the other five, or at least the first three, metta, expressed in deed, word, and in mind. So if people can practice such simple teachings, they are very simple to understand but difficult to practice. If they can practice such simple teachings, I think the world would be a much better place than it is now. And so if we want to do something for the good of the world, then we need to practice it ourselves, and also encourage other people to practice these qualities. So if these qualities become alive again in our society, then our society will become a peaceful and united, friction-free, stress-free, stress-free society. So, at least the first three, we should practice as much as we can. And then, sharing, keeping our moral precepts pure, and then ultimately practice vipassana meditation and try to become enlightened. So, these are the six ways that lead to the harmonious living and in the world, and also that makes people remember practitioners with love. Thank you.